Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Lucy Battersby, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. This week, we're talking about rising price-to-earnings ratios on Wall Street, the upcoming labour force data for Australia, which will be the first to really capture the lockdown impact. We'll also be looking at concerns about the changing rental market, and if it's possible, the US could be heading for negative interest rates. Today, I'm joined by IG Markets analyst Kyle Rodder. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Lucy.
So tell me about the price to earnings ratio that we're seeing in the US now that we've got a little bit more insight thanks to the latest reporting season.
Yeah, so I mean, we're effectively, 80 to 90% of the way through in terms of the companies that have reported through US earnings season. So the lion's share has really been done. But one of the big things that's obviously come out of this whole reporting period is, one, obviously a disappointing Q1 earnings season. So earnings have contracted quite considerably. But that future earnings have been downgraded a lot too. And it sort of flies in the face of this kind of V-shaped recovery narrative a little bit. And what that's led to throughout this period where prices have obviously rallied so considerably is that with earnings falling lower, we've seen price multiples get to some pretty juicy levels. So the forward price to earnings ratio across the entire S&P 500 has climbed to its highest point since the dot-com bubble back in the 2000s. So really quite eye-watering levels.
So is it that the prices have risen or that the expected earnings have fallen?
It's a divergence between both. So as we've seen prices rise, we've also seen the earnings outlook be downgraded quite considerably. And that's created this dynamic where one's going up and the other's going down quite aggressively, as it's wont to do sometimes in these sorts of markets. It's produced this environment where investors are paying a lot for earnings that are actually, judging by analyst forecasts, are diminishing quite quickly.
And I know the dot-com bubble was 20 years ago, but the bubble burst, was that because the earnings just suddenly disappeared that people were expecting?
That's the thing, is that when you get earnings ratios this high, it's implying that you expect there to be some extreme growth out the other side. And normally, even with the dot-com period, until it started to roll over, you still saw earnings growth picking up. It just didn't pick up at the rate that prices suggested they ought to have, and eventually things rolled over when everyone realized it was a speculative bubble. The dynamic really emerging this time, which is more concerning, is that it's an environment where optimism about future growth is just purely negative, almost categorically, which says that investors are running in, for whatever reason, there's lots of reasons as to why this might be the case, investors are still running in to buy stocks, probably to chase yield on this sort of there is no alternative basis. But it's leading to this environment where investors are paying for a lot and potentially are paying for something that could be worth less in the future than what they're buying for today. And it means that market fundamentals are still very, very sketchy, and that although volatility has come down and the market has stabilised a lot, that maybe we're not through the woods yet. That'd be the argument.
Thanks, Kyle. We'll keep an eye on how these prices manage to withstand all the economic news that comes in, all the data, but particularly about the GDP growth, because they're forecasting a massive decline.
Huge.
For the second quarter.
Yeah, massive, 25 to 30%.
All right, thank you. And speaking of economic data, we've got the Australian labour force statistics coming out. That's the unemployment rate this Thursday. There's a couple of differing expectations, but everyone's expecting it to get up substantially, 7% to 8%. I don't know, I'm sure there's someone predicting 9%. But what I found interesting, Kyle, was that there's expected to be a sharp drop in the number of people participating in the labour force. Mm. So Josh Williamson at Citi is expecting it to fall from 66% to 65 and a bit percent of the population. But this is mostly because the government no longer requires people on JobSeeker to actively look for work. And if you're not actively looking for work, you're not classified as unemployed.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a really interesting number to see is the size of the labour force. That's going to really tell us how many people have just given up trying to find a job.
Exactly. And it's been the tough thing. I mean, every country has their own different, unique way of trying to measure labour force participation and obviously just the job markets more broadly. But this is the challenge right now, because it's such an unprecedented event, is that we've got a situation where quite naturally there's lots of people being laid off. But more pertinently, there's a lot of people who are still technically employed but aren't working, which doesn't tell you much for how productive people in the economy more broadly is right now. So we even saw it in the US labour market data on Friday night, which came in slightly better than expected, would you believe it, at 14.7%. But the real question there was that, okay, those are the people that have obviously filed themselves as being unemployed, but what about all of those people that are still technically employed but aren't working because they are getting support through the government to stay on payrolls, and those who have just completely bailed out of the workforce and maybe won't even come back again? So that's the real challenge in trying to judge these numbers. You know, you get this sort of image through the estimates, like we're going to get on Thursday, for example, that the unemployment rate might be 8.3%, and compared to other parts of the world, that might seem okay. But it doesn't necessarily tell you much about, how many people are really out of work and how unproductive the economy has become in the last month or so.
Yes, it'll be the underemployment line will also be quite interesting because, I mean, you count it as employed if you've only had an hour of work in 1 week.
Yeah.
You know, no one can survive on that. The figures will be very interesting. It'll be also interesting to see if the recent rise that we've had on the ASX has been able to withstand that kind of negative shock.
Yeah, and that's, again, something that we've been speaking about for a few weeks, is just that notion that markets have moved well out of line with at least current fundamentals. So, again, you'd almost expect that this sort of labour market print, if it comes anywhere in line with expectations and well within the wide range of estimates that economists are forecasting, it'll be sort of shrugged off. But nevertheless, it doesn't instill much confidence about the future and create much confidence in the investment environment, I don't think.
Okay, thank you.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. And Kyle, we'll talk about some issues that are popping up on our radars at the moment. One I want to mention is something that the RBA pointed out in their statement on monetary policy last week when they mentioned the different scenarios that might occur to the economy this year. They mentioned that growth in rents is going to remain weak and the demand for housing is going to be lower because a lot of short-term rentals, which I expect are mostly Airbnb properties, they're not being booked by tourists and international students and people like coming to a major city to see a concert or a sporting event. And so a lot of them are being converted to long-term rentals. And so there's going to see a lot more apartments available for people who need to rent somewhere to live. Last night I had a look online, and in central Melbourne, there are some apartment buildings that have more than 100 apartments available for rent. And presumably these were mostly Airbnbs that have someone's just desperately trying to find a source of income for these apartments. But the RBA's fear is that this is going to eventually lead to an oversupply of rental accommodation and falling rents. And they didn't say this, but I'm guessing they're worried about forced selling and the long-term impact that this is going to have on the housing market.
It's been arguably a point of controversy, the over-reliance we've had on foreign investment, especially when it comes to construction activity in residential and apartment housing in major cities. Melbourne, I know, obviously, because we're both based in Melbourne in particular. But so much have we relied on foreign capital coming in to keep prices supported that it's always been the concern that any deterrent, natural or otherwise, that would pull that money out would lead to a bit of a cascade effect in the apartment market and really raise some pretty considerable risks for the financial system, you would intuitively sort of say, on the basis that if a whole bunch of these assets get written down and you do get to see all this forced selling and then just a waterfall effect with prices, that it could severely hit the broader economy. I suppose just by way of anecdote, I bought my apartment off someone who was getting out of there almost expressly for that reason. So it'll be certainly one to watch because there's a lot of opacity around it too. And I think that's where a lot of the mystery starts to come in, and how big of an impact would this have if you do start to see that sort of waterfall effect.
I wonder if we're going to see a shift in the power balance between landlords and renters. If rents do fall, then landlords might be desperate to keep the people that they've got in there.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd hope so. I suppose in that circumstances that there would be some flexibility in the market there, and there would be the ability to adjust. So you know, tenants can remain, and people don't have to go through those, obviously, that process of forced selling. So yeah, I guess that'd be the better of all alternatives. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens, because again, it's a very murky part of our economy, I think.
Yes, and Carl, what's popping up on your radar this week?
Well, I suppose in the context of almost what we were talking about before, where the future's maybe looking not quite as positive, at least as it's being estimated by market participants at the moment, is that we saw interest rate futures in the United States last week begin to price in the possibility of negative interest rates in the US, which is obviously incredibly concerning, because it says a much bigger hit to the US economy is coming, especially, you know, a much greater hit than what might be being priced in, say, equity markets at the moment, that potentially we could be heading to some sort of deflationary environment as well, which would be devastating given the high debt, high leverage environment that we are in, or at least the United States is in particular. Now, I suppose that the important caveat here is that the Fed on numerous occasions has said that they would never want to cut interest rates into negative territory like what's happened in Europe and Japan, and that they'd resort to other tools. But of course, we know that things that they said they'd never do, they've ended up doing at some point, and that's happened in the past. We've got a number of Fed speakers this week, and that little price action last week where, you know, again, the interest rate futures markets just briefly priced in the prospect of negative rates in the US has got everyone wondering now, well, is this a possibility from the Fed at some point in the future? So I would imagine these Fed speakers this week are going to get grilled on the subject.
It doesn't really smack of confidence in the economy, does it?
No. And it's definitely a secular trend too, where we've seen rates pricing in a world of much lower growth. And a lot of that's been, I suppose, manufactured by central bankers, but there's certainly a secular trend there where yields are falling, that rates are falling, and there's often, you know, talk about what is the equilibrium rate of interest in an economy. And some people say that that might actually be in negative territory where, you know, savings and investment is balanced out. So it all goes to this argument that potentially we're on an inevitable road to negative rates, and that I suppose for market participants, it'll all be about now gauging the Fed's potential willingness to canvass such an idea, and what level of pushback they have against it. And then, you know, if they are quite vehemently against the notion, and we are in an environment that the markets are suggesting now is going to require more monetary stimulus, what will they do instead of negative interest rates to substitute that?
Okay, thank you very much, Kyle.
Thank you.
This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog, and feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.